Hey everybody, Stu Smith here going live. I hope you are well. And we are going to get it started this Monday morning. So, something I wrote about this weekend is really an extra phase of your SpecOps journey that a lot of people don't consider. And what I mean by that is the everybody knows phase one, you're working really hard to prepare to get to SEAL training or whatever military, law enforcement, firefighter job you're doing. I specifically wrote about SEAL training because this is the one I see the most errors in, right? So people work really hard to try to get there. A lot of times they're stopped in their tracks with medical issues, legal issues. You know, you name it. There's a lot of reasons why people can't get accepted into the military. So that's the first one. It's hard to get accepted in the military. It's hard to get to BUDS because once you get accepted in the military, now you got to crush this PST. You got to be a competitive candidate, higher scores on ASVAB. All of those need to qualify you in order just to get to the training, which is a challenging process. So that's hard. Getting through BUDS is even harder. And particularly if you didn't make it, you already know that. So, but you've also gained a few points of insight with that failure. And I prefer to call it a learning experience. So you're now smarter, you know where your weaknesses are, you know what you need to work on. However, that next phase, if you want to go back and give it a second try, the problem is there's more things out of your control than are in your control. And what I mean by that is, yes, you can go work really hard, be a great sailor in whatever job that you are doing after a BUDS failure or quitting or whatever you want to call it. And your goal is to try to get back. Now, let's see what you need to do. Well, you need to be a good sailor. You need to have a chain of command support in order to go back. And you need to crush the PST just like you always did on phase one of getting two BUDS. It's just a couple more hurdles. However, there's two big obstacles in your way that you have no control over. One of those is your year group. The year that you join the military is what is called your year group. And that year group is full of people joining the military in all different branches, all different jobs. And there's certain limits to each number of people for that job in that year group. And let's say, you know, SEALs typically do this all the time. They will over recruit because they know they're going to have 75% typically that will fail training. And so they need to recruit 1,000 in order to get 250, if that makes any sense, every year. So that is part of the process. However, if there's a year where, let's say 300 graduate, now that year group is full or overmanned even. And that year group is not going to be open until people start leaving the military sometimes 4 or 6 years later. So if your year group is full, you're not going back to BUDS. Then whatever job you are doing, if that is undermanned, meaning that there's not enough people in that job at your current rank, you're not going back. So those two things have to be in alignment for you to get orders on top of you working hard, having some humility in failing and learning from it and growing from it and being more mature and focusing on your training and your recovery. All of those things have to come into play in order for you to get back and be a good student. So that is what this latest article that I just wrote is all about. And there's some really good points in there that I just want people to realize it's not a good plan B to leave Buds thinking you can get back. If it's your decision is what I'm meaning. So if you're failing something, chances are, you know, if you're not going to get better at it and pass it, you know, you might leave because you failed something. That's a weakness that you need to work on. If it's your decision, you decide to quit, my advice is hold off on that, because the next part of your journey is going to suck trying to get back to where you are, if that's what you want to do. And a lot of people do. If it's not what you want to do, that's great. Go and crush your next job. Get some great experience, some great skills. Pay for college. You know, all of those things are great benefits that you need to take advantage of, you know, in your 6 years of the military, if you're going to do that job. And that is really the same for any spec ops journey. A lot of people retread and try to go back. And they just have to be squared away when they do it and be a good student while they're there. All right, folks. So read that article. Let me know if you have any questions on it. Anything that you thought I left out, you know, let me know. Beauty about having one of these things online is I can change it anytime, add some more stuff to it. So let's take some questions. I don't have a whole lot of time today, but we have enough to take some questions as they come in. Let's see what we got here. Stu is training for Army SF, currently training for PJ. I've been doing 2025s. All right, good. That's a starting program for the 50-50. What other workouts should I do after? Before, what should I do before and after? What's a good warm-up, cool-down workout? Well, if you're talking about just water, I mean, there's a whole lot more to your training than swimming. My advice would be to always warm up with a 500-meter swim, because that's going to be your test. And if you can treat your 500 swim as a warm-up, that's great. However, in the IFT that the Air Force takes, swimming is last. So you may want to do a 500 cool-down after those workouts, because that's going to be a little more realistic to how you feel in that IFT. What I would do is probably do some treading and drown-proofing skills for your warm-up, because treading is vertical swimming. So work on some egg beater, work on some scissor kicks, no hands, all that. That'll loosen you up pretty well. But hang on a second. If you haven't seen this, then I'm not sure what rock you're living under. Get this program. I'm telling you, it works. Not even $20. And it will answer all your questions on what you should be doing before and after. Do you think there's a benefit to mastering a variety of strokes? Breaststroke, backstroke, butterfly, elementary stroke for PJ selection. I don't know. My advice is, yeah, it's not a bad idea to have some diversity in your swimming skills. But mastering all of those is going to take a significant amount of time. Learning them is a different story, right? I would suggest learning, knowing how to do them, but I wouldn't say mastering all of them is needed. Backstroke wouldn't even bother. In fact, just replace backstroke with turtle backing. That's with a big pair of scuba fins just on your back. 99% of your swims when you go to training are probably going to be with fins, whether you're scuba diving or you're swimming on the surface, turtle backing with those big rocket fins, lead arm, trail arm for PJs. You're going to need to learn how to do that. And that's, I would spend more time swimming with fins than I would learning breaststroke or backstroke or butterfly. Butterflies, not even, I don't even know how to do butterfly. I've been swimming for I don't know, 40 years now. Never even bothered to learn it. Haven't even tried it. Breaststroke, yes. Elementary side stroke, yes. Backstroke, butterfly, no. Freestyle, that's a good one. You should know freestyle for just pure conditioning value. And underwater swimming. Tied to my above question, how much help is water polo for Air Force PJ WaterCon? Can it significantly help or not necessarily? It can significantly help. I don't know if you ever noticed what a water polo player is capable of doing in the water, but they are the professional treading association of any aquatics activity. You know, they are the best treaders in the world. In fact, I went to a water polo practice the other day. So I'm using the same pool when I coached my spec ops guys, and water polo guys were in there, and they all had water jugs, two hand, you know, full water jug. So it's about 40 pounds of water treading, no fins, just egg beater treading over their head. And they had to do it like 10 times. And I was timing how long it took for them to drain that 40 pound. At first it's 40 pounds, but it took about 25 seconds before all the water came out of that jug. So you got to keep it above the water. Otherwise water's not going to come out of it. They are the professional water guys. Now I will tell you this, you know, it doesn't matter what sport you do when it comes to scuba diving. I've seen guys that did water polo, swimming, that just did not. They eventually passed it, but they were in the same kind of league everybody else was in when it came to procedures for ditching and donning. And yeah, they might have had a little more water comfort to them, but you know, as far as learning the procedures and all the other stuff that you do underwater, you know, breathing on scuba, everybody's in the same boat. So I can't say it's going to help you significantly, but I promise you this, if you learn egg beater because you are a breaststroker or you practice egg beater as a water polo athlete, you will do better in water con type stuff. But you also need to run and ruck and lift and PT. You know, there's a whole lot more to it. Hey, Stu, are the 400 meter goal pace runs intended to get the heart rate up and then down and up and down? I tried to get really winded doing 400 meters, but 800 meters isn't as difficult. Well, here's the goal. When it says goal pace, yeah, you know, the goal is to hit, let's say if you're trying to get a 6 minute mile or a 9 minute mile and a half, that's a 6 minute mile pace. That's a 90 second quarter mile. So a minute and a half. So the goal is to get that minute and a half, not to be winded, to be honest with you, because you want to have some form of aerobic base that your heart rate is not skyrocketing when you're doing a goal pace run. A goal pace run should be faster than a jog, but not a sprint. If you want to get winded doing the 400s and 800s, sprint them. Do them as fast as you can. That sucks. Like sometimes we'll do 400s and see who can get under 60 seconds. Whew, that's a hard one. You know, most guys are flirting. Most guys that get under 70, under 65, but not many people get under 60 seconds. That's kind of like the gold standard, unless you're a sprinter, for these kind of workouts. And then try to do a 90 second one after that, you know, with a little bit of rest, and you'll see how easy 90 second pace is. So the goal is to try to get in shape to maintain a 90 second quarter mile, 400, for the full mile and a half. So what that means is the goal pace runs, I like to work them like this, whether it's a 400 or 800. If I'm trying to do a 6 minute mile, that's going to be a minute and a half 400 and a 3 minute 800. And my rest is minimal. So I typically will walk 100 meters for that rest. But if I'm feeling like my heart rate has recovered to a point, I may only walk 50 meters and start the next run right there. So the goal is to be able to string as many of those goal pace runs together with as little rest as possible. That's the same way with the 50-50s. You know, once you start doing the 25-25s, you build up to the 50-50s. You know, you're resting 30 seconds in between each 50-50. You know, you want to get rid of that and try to rest with two breaths, and then you go to the next one. So it's all about conditioning at that pace so you're not out of breath whenever you're testing. Okay. That's a long answer, but I hope it worked for you. Lastly, Stu, for those who want to improve their push-ups dramatically, do you prefer prescribing lots of volume throughout the day or shorter intense sets at max effort? Both. So I don't recommend doing any of these calisthenics daily unless you're doing the 10-day protocol. And I'll put this here, and I don't like doing this very often. You'll see it's like, do it once. If it doesn't work for you, don't do it again. And don't do it again if it works for you. It's too much volume at the end of the week because it's daily push-ups for a while, for 10 days. And then you rest 3 days, kind of like an overload principle. Rest 3 days, test on day 14. Then you go back to every other day doing push-ups and pull-ups and things like that. So my advice is to mix it up. So one day you do a mix of everything. It's a pyramid. So you start off sub-max, work your way up to max, failure, and then work your way back down. That is a classic volume-building exercise routine that works. The other one is the superset, which is all sub-max rep effort, meaning you're going to do 10 sets of 10 pull-ups, 20 push-ups, 30 sit-ups, right? Just for some numbers out there. It could be 5, 10, 15, whatever your level is. And you just do that, maybe rest with a quarter-mile jog afterwards just to get some volume in with that too. And the goal is to not fail. And note when you do fail, right? Is it set 7? Right. And the next time you do it, you might fail on set 9 instead of set 7. So you're getting better. That's the way you use these workouts to assess your performance. And then the last one is the max rep effort, very intense workout like the Murph, you know, where you do 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 sit-ups in as few sets as possible. And your rest after each little circuit can be quarter mile, half mile run. You come back and get after it with the next set of max reps until you just, you know, you're failing. Now, it's real easy to do 300 sit-ups in one set if you just kind of pace it out. But that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for like 1 minute sets on push-ups, 1 minute sets on sit-ups, but at a pace, right? You're going to do well with sit-ups if you pace yourself, right? 1 minute of push-ups, typically people start shaking at about the 1 minute mark, starting to burn a little bit. That's a good time to stop, move on to sit-ups, go for a run, come back, hit your next set of pull-ups. So there's three workouts. If you read that article, my three favorite workouts I like to do to crush fitness tests, push-ups, one of those events. So check that out. That's what I would do. I wouldn't do them daily. I would do them every other day at the most. I personally like to do like a pyramid on Monday, superset on Wednesday, give 2 days, and then on Saturday do the max rep set workout. That is where I have seen people who are doing moderately okay on all the events, but they're just kind of stuck like in the teens on pull-ups or maybe stuck at 65, 70 on push-ups. Same for sit-ups. And I found that workout, you know, after a 2-day rest once a week puts you in a month, puts you in that 20 plus, 80 plus, maybe even 90 in those push-up sit-up world too. Let's see, what do we have here? Next question. Hey, everybody. Hey, Stu. For the open water swims at Buzz, do you ever get to swim with the tide? Does it increase your speed at all? Absolutely. The way it works is you will swim to a buoy, which is parallel. You'll swim parallel to the beach, a mile to the buoy. You'll turn around the buoy and swim a mile back. Usually, there is a current going against you getting there and pushing you coming back. Sometimes it's the other way around. So that is where I teach a strategy for this. I personally like whenever the tide is pushing me and I'm getting a good push out of it. You can just see like I'm not even kicking and I'm moving along the beach. That's a good feeling. But you know you got to swim against it coming back. So what I do is I'll do the like a scissor kick and hold the glide for, you know, this is with fins when I'm going with the current, because that's just an easy way to kick. Use your arms when you need to breathe. One big kick, hold the glide. It's a really nice, efficient way to get down the beach. Then when you turn around, come back, it is better, in my advice, to constantly flutter kick and just keep the motor going all the way back. There's no reason why you can't keep the motor going down and back if you want, but you know you can still go pretty fast with that scissor kick glide and save some energy, especially for the coming back. And the reason why I recommend that is a lot of times people are prone to, you know, cramps. You know, you do a a whole hour and 10 minutes of flutter kicking, you're probably going to get some calf cramps in there. You know, especially if you've been running before that, you're not really hydrated. There's some issues that can occur. So you got to think about the big picture whenever you do these swims. You know, are you hydrated? Do you have electrolytes? You know, do you got the juice to constantly flutter kick the whole thing? If you do, great. But sometimes you need to strategize those things and figure out what's the fastest way I can do this with the less effort. So that's when you're thinking. Because the thinking man's game out there. Do you think the average American male has the potential to meet the physical demands of Buzz or above average athleticism endurance required? I mean, I have seen some average guys, non-athletic guys, make it through SEAL training. Now, they were just tough. They may have done something else that put their mental toughness to a different level, like maybe just grew up poor, had to work, go to school, had to work afterwards. They were working on a farm or some other manual labor job all day. You know, so many different things than being an athlete can get you through SEAL training. Most of it's toughness, to be honest with you, and how bad you really want it. You know, I've seen guys that went through Hell Week 2-3 times just to get through it. And, you know, it's pretty amazing when you see what the human body can do. One thing I will tell you is you'll learn when you go through all that is that your body is 10 times stronger than your brain will let it be. So sometimes you just have to, you know, disengage that thinking part of the brain that's saying, hey, why are you doing this? You shouldn't be doing this. That's the biggest hurdle, I think. I meant current. Yeah, current, tides, whatever. I knew what you're saying. I'm overweight powerlifter with when I finish lifting, I don't feel like doing cardio. I was wondering, should I do cows and cardio so I can get in the cardio? Any suggestions? I want to be a SEAL. Well, if you're an overweight powerlifter, I would stop lifting. right now. Just stop. Get out of the weight room. That's the last thing you need. You're going to be plenty strong for your journey. Chances are you probably have more strength than everybody in your buds class anyway, even if you didn't lift for a year. And yeah, I would go with this. This is a great place to start, you know, especially if you're not used to running. You need some non-impact cardio before you start running because shins and knees are going to feel it, especially if you're overweight. It's what I did. I was an overweight powerlifting football player. Wound up losing like 25 pounds. Didn't play football. And I didn't lift anymore. And probably 18 months before I went to Buds. And I was still plenty strong to not be crushed under a log. So you're going to have a foundation of strength that a lot of people don't have. However, your endurance will not be foundational. Your endurance will be like, if you don't run for a week, it's like you've never run before ever. So you got to stay on top of the endurance. And what I would do, since you're a little bit bigger, is kind of treat it like a triathlon where two-thirds of your cardio is going to be non-impact cardio, focusing on swimming, biking, rowing, whatever you want to do, but swimming should be the bigger part of that non-impact percentage, and then just a little bit of running, and build up that little bit of running each week. Otherwise, you're going to break. Just to clarify, two-mile open water swims are combat side stroke. Absolutely. We don't do freestyle at Buds. Stu, sorry to keep asking so many questions. No problem. But for guys who know who have been, what did they make of Fletsy? I've had plenty of guys get through Fletsy. Also, can federal law enforcement prep guys well for National Guard PJ or National Guard SF, provided they train, serve on SWAT SRT? Yeah, absolutely. I can tell you a dozen people at least that have done active duty, went National Guard, went federal law enforcement, or the other way around. We've had some guys do, like, we have a paramedic who joined the FBI, was a paramedic police officer, you know, flew in the helicopters, went FBI, became a SWAT team medic in the FBI on their SWAT team, and then went all the way through HRT doing it at that high level. So now he didn't want to go do any National Guard or anything like that, but he could if he wanted to. Freaking stud. But yeah, that's, I'd say all of those are very part of a progression if you want to do it. That makes sense. Whew. So another question here. Opinion on doing Monday, Tuesday, a gym workout, Thursday, Friday, high cals, kind of like a winter. I mean, I think that's fine for a maintenance plan, but here's the problem. Whether it is strength training or endurance training or muscle stamina training, it is hard to improve both at the same time. At best, you might improve one and maintain the other. Typically, what happens is neither one of them improve. You just kind of maintain. You might get a little better in a little bit, but you won't get better at the level and the speed of if you just focused on lifting or if you just focused on cals and cardio. Now, my periodization programs, like the winter lift cycle and the summer cals and cardio cycles, are arranged that way to where you still do some calisthenics in the winter lift cycle, but it's a warm-up. And you focus all your main part of your energy on the lifts. Then you end it with some cardio on the back end. So you're maintaining your cardio during the winter lift cycle, and you're maintaining some cows during your winter lift cycle. And then on the backside, whenever you're in this, like the summer training program, the way we add lifting to it is we'll do, if we're focusing on getting better of calisthenics and cardio, we will focus for 3 weeks on pushing hard for cows and cardio. Then we'll take 1 week off and do kind of a cows and cardio running deload, and it's all lifting with maybe 50% of the running that we were doing that 1 week. And we get back into cows and cardio. In fact, right now we're in a cows and cardio week in the what is turning out to be the end of our fall lift transition and to our winter lift cycle. We're doing a week of cows and cardio right now after lifting for the last 12 weeks, or progressively adding lifting for the last 12 weeks. So this is our last progression of the lifts for the fall. And then this week is a deload, cows and cardio, no lifting. Next week, we're going to take some tests. We're going to do like the body weight bench test, the weight vest pull-up test. We'll still do a run test, maybe a PST thrown in there, just to see where our scores are for some of those events. Deadlifts and all that. But deadlifts are going to be more of a introductory test going into the winter lift cycle. So we got heavier benches, deadlifts, squats, you know, those kind of strength building activities coming into the winter lift cycle. So we'll do it before, and then at the end of the winter lift cycle, we'll do another one of these like deload cycles where we'll test again of those final lifts just to see where people are. Main thing I want to see is that people have gotten a little bit stronger, but they've also gained 10 pounds in the winter if they needed to gain weight. But they also maintain their cows and cardio through that whole cycle. Now, we're not going to be running as much, but we're running faster. So it's a different form of cardio we're keeping up with. We're keeping up with like mile and a half time speed versus four or longer type distances. And the way we do our winter lift cycle is just the opposite of what I explained earlier. We'll do 3 weeks of lifting, 1 week of cows and cardio. 3 weeks of lifting, 1 week of cows and cardio. And then finally, 3 weeks of lifting, 1 week of cows and cardio test. And then we're in the spring cycle getting ready for moving into more cows and cardio for the spring and summer. Is what we call a block periodization model within the seasonal tactical fitness periodization system. And I tell you, man, it works. It works really well. And I wouldn't write about it if it didn't. And I wouldn't be on here saying you should consider it if it didn't work. I've seen it work countless times for people who are non-lifting athletes, put on 10 pounds of muscle, and then they're still running like a cross-country runner. 15 pounds heavier, crushing calisthenics, crushing lifts. So that's how I would do it. But if you want to maintain it, you can do it your way. Because that's probably all you're going to do, just maintain your current fitness. Hey, Smith, I got one more question. Should I start cows and cardio now or do it before? Do it about a year to get ready for buds. Cows and cardio is a cycle that you can do a couple times a year, especially if you need it. If you're a powerlifting guy, you'll probably need a couple of cycles of it before you go into like the phase one cycle where mostly cows and cardio again, but it's really focused on 500 yard swims, mile and a half runs, pull up, push up, sit ups, you know, PST crushing type workouts. But yeah, there's plenty right here in this corner to last you all you need before you ship. This one to get you started. If you need to do it twice, do it twice. Go into this one, focus on crushing the PST, and then take it to the next level with phase 2-3, get through selection, prep for specific events of that selection. That means there's more 2-mile swims in there and with fins, and there's running 4-mile timed runs, and there's rucking and log PT preparation with a lot of sandbag work. So that's how it's set up. Those are a little more specific. Damn, we're doing pretty well here. Today was a hill day for us. One of our guys' last day before he ships. Good day. So, if you don't know what our hill day is, our hill day looks like this. We run about 2.5 miles to get to the hill. Along that run, we'll stop every 100 yards and do like a squat pyramid. So today, you know, it's one squat, run 100 meters, two squats, run 100 meters, three squats. Do that till you get to 20. That's 210 squats. Then you still have about a mile, mile and a half to go before you're actually there at the hill. Then you run this hill that's a pretty good, decent hill five times. Get pretty winded on that. Turn around, and that, and each hill is a quarter mile up and a quarter mile down, so it adds another half mile for every lap you do. And then we run back, and along the way there are three marked areas where it's 800 meters are marked in. So we'll do three 800 meter runs mixed in with some squats and lunges, and then the final, you know, jog it in to the final quarter mile, and you just do a quarter mile lunge. So that was our calisthenics leg day for our hill day. And it's pretty good. Let me see how many. I don't know how many steps I got. We're about to see. So today was almost 13,000 steps. I don't know what that means. Be honest with you. Let's Google it. So 13,000 steps equals how many miles? Let's see. 6.5 miles. Damn, that's almost exactly right. Pretty good. 2.5 down, 2.5 back. That's 5 plus hills. Every round trip's another half mile. Hell yeah. Right on. All right. Oh, it looks like I've got another question here. Sorry. Do you recommend running if knees are hurting? I had a long run of 8 miles and my knees were on fire afterwards. I usually run about 5 a day. Yeah, I mean, here's my situation for you to think about. So we did legs on, well, kind of a leg day on Saturday, where we did like a Murph type workout. So I felt my legs a little bit this Monday morning. So I reduced some of those squats and didn't quite do 400 meters worth of lunges. So I pulled back a little on that because my legs were bothering me. Knees hurt, butt hurts, you know, just undue soreness from Saturday. I ran anyway, stretched a lot, stopped to stretch a lot. So that is what I would do first. Is see if maybe a 10-minute bike and a light stretch puts all the pain away, right? You kind of warm up and the pain goes away. If it doesn't, you got one more option, is just run a mile and see how the pain is at that 1 mile mark. If it is still bothering you, like the warm up and the mile didn't get rid of anything, then I would stop. However, 9 times out of 10, if it's like just some overuse, maybe some tendonitis a little flared up, it'll go away. However, you need to address it afterwards a lot. I mean, what I mean by that is make sure you're stretching, you're foam rolling, you're cooling down, maybe hop on a bike for 15, 20 minutes and then stretch afterwards. That's going to help you, especially if you're running 5 miles a day. I would spend more time in your cooling down, and you're going to be amazed at what that does to help you, whether you are biking, rowing, foam rolling, stretching, mix it all in there. You know, sometimes I'll go swimming. I'll do some aqua jogging in the pool after a run like today. That's very helpful. But don't blow off your cool downs, because that's probably what's happening in my uneducated opinion. Celeste, good job. 8,000 a day. Nice. What are the benefits of lunges as compared to squat? Lunges tend to bother my old knees. Yeah, I like both. Be honest with you, I think lunges are a little harder, but it also depends on how you lean forward. Like if you do a lunge and your back is perfectly vertical, you're definitely going to feel it more in the butt part, hamstring section. But if you give yourself like a good 45 degree angle lean going into that lunge, you're going to be more knee thigh connection and work those muscles, you know, in that. So try it if you want to be vertical, you know, make that good 90 degree angle, you know, with your knee versus kind of leaning over it a little bit. That may help you. But Tom, I understand, man, I got old knees too. And I'll be honest with you, I'm more scared of not doing them anymore than doing them, if that makes any sense. What I mean by that is motion is lotion. So figure out a way to do them, and maybe holding on to something, taking off a little bit of the weight off your knee at first. Something I like to do are TRX lunges, where I grab onto the TRX. It is pulling a good 30, 40% of my body weight up whenever I bend down to do a lunge. And I just step backwards and then bring my knee up, right? And bring it forward. And that puts about 50% roughly of my weight on my knees. So that's another way to mix them in there. But yeah, I'm almost scared to stop, to be honest with you. Always tell people I don't mind being the oldest guy out here. I just don't want to be the youngest guy in a senior home. So got to find that balance somewhere, right? I don't want to drive myself into being doing too much, but also don't want to do nothing and be weaker as I age. So it is a balance, though. You got to figure that out. I would suggest, you know, if you can do squats, you know, add some weight to them. See how that feels. After a while, you may find that with a little added strength to those squats, lunges aren't as hard on your knees. And it does matter how you bend down, too. You can put a lot of that weight on your butt and hamstrings versus your knees and thighs. All right, folks, I am going to have to cut it short today. I have got an article to write and kind of have a little writer's block, but I got to get over it. So I appreciate you guys watching. You guys hit that like button. I run on likes. You guys check out my TikTok page. That thing's almost up to 10,000 likes or followers who want to learn nothing but the CSS, because that's all I have on there. About a couple hundred CSS videos all in one place. So follow that one. I promise you it'll teach you how to do the CSS. And if I haven't told you before, go over to stewsmithfitness.com. Check out the articles over there. Got a ton of great articles. The latest ones, a lot of CSS articles I did. I did this whole CSS help series that I think is going to break down the CSS for you very well. So just hit the articles link over there at stewsmithfitness.com. And of course, there's a store over there. If you use the Live15 coupon code, you will save 15% just for whatever you buy over there, books and ebooks. So, all right, folks, I appreciate your time, and I will be back tomorrow with some CSS videos. Send me some CSS videos if you have them. Happy to check them out and critique them for you, and we'll just move on. And I think I need to go. So sorry, I missed this last question. I see it just pop up. Share it for tomorrow and we'll talk about swimming. You guys have a good one. See you tomorrow.